Hello, listeners. Welcome to season 7 of our Big Unlock podcast. My name is Ritu M. Oberoi, and I'll be your host today. We're super excited to have Naomi today with us. Naomi Fried is one of healthcare's most respected innovation leaders. She's the founder and CEO of PharmStars, where she's helping pharma companies engage more effectively with digital health startups to accelerate innovation and improve patient outcomes. And prior to PharmStars, Naomi has served as the Chief Innovation Officer at Boston Children's, where she helped establish one of the nation's leading pediatric digital health innovation programs. Her unique perspective across providers, startups, and life sciences gives her a front row view into what it really takes to move healthcare innovation from promising pilots to meaningful impact. So we're really excited to have her on the podcast today, and welcome, Naomi.
Thank you, Ritu. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. Would you like to add anything to that introduction?
Sure. Happy to share a little bit more about how I ended up founding PharmStars. So my roots actually start out working with digital health startups a long, long time ago. I don't want to age myself, but then advising venture capitalists. And then I was actually the first vice president of innovation and advanced technology at Kaiser Permanente. And I really became intrigued with how innovation happens in large healthcare organizations. I was there 5 years when I moved to the East Coast. And as you mentioned, became the first chief innovation officer at Boston Children's Hospital and built a fabulous program there, helping doctors and nurses advance innovation. And from there, I was actually recruited to Biogen. And this is the most relevant part for how I ended up at PharmStars. And Ritu, I thought that moving to Biogen would be an easy transition. I'd been in healthcare innovation in large organizations for a long time, but I really wasn't prepared for how different the pharmaceutical industry was. When I got to Biogen, I discovered I actually didn't understand how the company was organized. I certainly didn't understand how this very complicated product, a drug they made, worked. And it really was a very steep learning curve. It made me appreciate how hard it is for someone outside pharma to understand what's happening inside of pharma. But I also, at that time, fell in love with the potential for digital solutions to transform all the aspects of the pharmaceutical value chain, from drug development through discovery, commercialization, and beyond the molecule for patients. And then that really became my life's mission. And I went on to advise other pharmaceutical companies on digital health strategy. And I had really a big aha moment, Ritu, when I was working for a large pharmaceutical company, and they had told me they were looking for a particular type of innovation. And I found a startup that was doing exactly what they wanted. And we got everybody into the room and we were chatting and we were not getting anywhere. I could see connections weren't being made. People weren't sort of understanding each other. And I realized now what I was watching was the pharma startup gap in action. And it's that pharma startup gap, the fundamentally different way that tech, health tech, companies and biopharma operate, that is the thing that we want to solve through PharmStars. We are bridging the pharma startup gap. We are bringing these two groups together. And that was really the motivation for founding PharmStars 5 years ago.
Wow. Thank you for telling us all about that, Naomi. It's really interesting to, you know, hear your perspectives on that, which leads me to the next question. You know, PharmStars sits at the intersection of pharma companies and digital health startups. So you worked with both sides, like you said, and you have, you know, such varied experience with like Kaiser, with Biogen. So what in your mind are the biggest misconceptions each group has about the other? And what separates successful partnerships from those that never move beyond like, you know, the initial stage?
Yeah, great question. So I think that, you know, going back to the pharma startup gap, the elements of it are that tech startups and big pharma speak a different language. They have a very different culture. I don't have to explain that to you, but they also move at different speeds. They have different appetite for risk. They operate in different regulated environments. So really the challenge is understanding each other. And I think to bridge that gap, you have to understand where the other's coming from. And that's why at PharmStars, we focus on educating startups about how pharma works. Our program is called Pharma University, and we have two key components for the startups. One is literally teaching them about pharma, how drugs are developed, how pharma is organized, all the regulations that they need to be concerned with, their business models. And then we also help startups through Pharma University through personalized mentoring by former pharma executives. So I think it's that education and understanding of the other that really helps to build a successful relationship. Obviously, you need communication. You need to be able to connect. Those are sort of table stakes. And that's actually another way we help our startups in the program is at the end of FarmStars, they have an opportunity to present to our pharma members and then have one-on-one meetings with them. But I think really speaking the same language, understanding the unmet needs, we always coach our startups that they have to be able to explain what the pharma problem is that they're solving. So really stepping into the other's shoes is super important to be able to build a relationship and do a deal. And I think on the pharma side, we hope that they can understand, you know, the pressures and needs of startups. They want to move quickly, which is not something pharma does so much. They are not really heavily staffed, so they won't have a general counsel. They'll be, you know, just working with a lawyer. So just understanding that they're in very different places. But when startups and pharma come together to work on innovation, the patient always benefits and the outcomes are tremendous and it's really synergistic. So we're very excited about bringing these groups together and bridging that otherwise huge gap.
Yeah, I think you guys are doing excellent work with FarmStars. As you know, we are two-time applicants. So we've gone through, you know, the entire website and understand the program. And I think it's absolutely brilliant. And it's amazing what you've put together. And we're really happy to spread the word and tell more people to apply to that program because you're doing great work on that.
Thank you. At this point, we have run 10 cohorts. We're about to start our 11th. And we have 112 startups that have come through our program now. And because they learn product market fit, they go on to be very successful selling to pharma. And we've seen our first 35 startups do over 100 deals with pharma. And the other statistic we're very proud of is that our startups have raised over $1 billion in funding. So really learning what your client needs is transformative, I think, to a business.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And that leads right into the next question where, you know, we are seeing these huge pharma companies investing heavily in digital health, AI, patient engagement technologies. But looking ahead, you have this viewpoint where you're talking to so many of these startups. So where do you see the greatest opportunity for startups to create value for pharma beyond, you know, these traditional patient support or adherence programs, which everybody is doing? So exactly what you were saying, you know, they have to understand the pharma problems and make sure that they position themselves to the great PMF so that, you know, the pharma companies can then invest in them. So it's like a mutually beneficial situation. So from your viewpoint, what are like some key focus areas you are seeing where, you know, it would be awesome if you found this cool startup doing that?
Yeah, it's a great question. So I think that there are opportunities for digital health startups across the pharma value chain. Obviously, in the very early stages of drug discovery, people are applying AI and we're seeing just a real acceleration of the identification of targets, of new drugs there. I think the biggest area of opportunity is still in clinical trials. And because that is the slowest and most expensive part of drug development, solutions that can help pharma with their problems there are really still needed. And if you look in particular at phase 3 trials, which are the longest, the most expensive, finding patients, keeping them in the trials, anticipating when there's going to be issues, helping with data management, it's incredibly complicated to run a clinical trial. And so I think that's where the biggest opportunity is. There's certainly also opportunities on the commercial side and marketing, and we've seen some really exciting solutions there. But I personally am very excited about the clinical trial phase. And I would also say the what we call beyond molecule part of the pharma value chain, where it's really the patient taking the drug and digital tools that can help with adherence, can help with monitoring the condition. There's a lot of opportunities there for digital solutions. So I am very excited about digital, about AI. It's really helping pharma take what is a very slow and very expensive process and hopefully make it faster, cheaper, and bring more drugs to market more quickly for us.
Yeah, that's something we've been hearing through and through in all our conversations, that everybody's now having to move at this warp speed, even the industries or like healthcare has traditionally been one of the slowest adopters. But now they're learning to talk in months or weeks or, you know, days, like you can't even talk like in years anymore because the pace of innovation is so rapid. So good to see. And yeah, definitely we've been hearing about drug discovery, you know, that AI is really going to transform the time in terms of the time taken to launch new drugs or even find the new molecules, like you were saying?
Say in pharma, really, time is money, Ritu, because you have basically a patent clock that's ticking. And if it takes you 14 years to bring your drug to market, you have 5 years maybe left to actually sell your drug and recoup all of the investment, which is usually a couple billion dollars. So every month that you can bring your drug to market earlier can be millions and millions of dollars in additional revenue. So for pharma, anything that can shorten that drug development cycle and move the line between developing the drug and actually selling the drug is really, really important.
Yeah, that's interesting. So when we're talking to these other C-suite leaders across the health systems, one challenge we are seeing which healthcare continues to face is this gap between innovation and adoption. So what I'm trying to say is that these startups have these promising technologies, but then when they go to clinical settings, you're seeing that they don't kind of scale or they don't succeed. So in your mind, what can entrepreneurs do differently to design solutions that fit naturally into, you know, provider and patient workflows, especially when you're talking about like the clinical trials phase three, where you're saying, you know, it's like such a slow process. So what would be your advice for startups?
I think in the pharma world, we also suffer from the problem of pilots get started, but then they don't sort of scale to adoption. And I think this, again, goes back to sort of the fundamentals of the project. Are you solving an important problem? Can you demonstrate value? And do you have metrics that are clear that you're going to achieve as a pilot so that you can convince people that this is worth scaling and, you know, that doing this, adopting it broadly makes sense? So we advise our startups to think carefully about the pilot, to plan and discuss with their business partners what success looks like, and ideally also plan out a process of, if this goes well, what is the next step? So I think, you know, leaving the adoption to a future conversation is not always advisable. Of course, you can't figure out all the adoption issues, but sort of anticipating that there will be adoption and think about how that is going to happen in advance is very advantageous.
That's good advice. Thank you for sharing that. So just to change tracks a little bit, Naomi, it's interesting to hear you talk about all these different topics. I would love to hear your origin story, you know, how you came into science and how you kind of landed here. Like, what was that unique of skills that brought you here?
So I actually studied chemistry as an undergrad, and then I got a PhD in material science engineering at MIT. And I started working at a startup in Kendall Square back when it looked very different than it looks right now. I was employee number 4 at a small startup on the tech side, of course. But our startup was having a conversation with Boston Scientific about maybe doing a partnership. And I found the business conversation so interesting. So even though I had trained in science and technology, this business thing was quite curious and fascinating. And then when I moved to California for my husband's job, I had the opportunity to get involved with a startup that was being spun out of Stanford School of Medicine. And it was in the what we used to call e-health space. So even before there was digital health, we called it e-health. And the technology was developed by a physician at Stanford School of Medicine and was to help doctors and nurses get quick answers to questions that came up while treating patients. This is before Google, before WebMD, this is like a novel tool. And I thought, this is really cool. I love the idea of using technology to help patients, to help doctors. And so that was really my transition into healthcare. And as I said, I started working with startups and went on to Kaiser, and the rest is sort of history. But that transition from science to business sort of just happened organically. And then I never thought I would be going into the world of healthcare, but I really fell in love with this idea and became very excited by how digital solutions can help patients, can help doctors. And even through, you know, PharmStars, we see all sorts of digital health solutions, medical devices, software, obviously AI, but there's some really cool and interesting ways that patients and clinicians can benefit, and pharma can too. So I love what I do now.
That's amazing. I want to ask you about the, you know, latest cohort of PharmStars and what the topic is going to be this time. But before that, I want to dig a little deeper into your origin story, because when we ask people what brought them to science, or especially when we ask physicians, you know, why they became doctors, sometimes we hear like the most amazing answers. So did you always know you wanted to do chemistry, or when did you like kind of come to that realization?
No, I didn't know what I was going to do basically in high school. And then I took a chemistry class, I think my junior year, and I was just like, this is so cool. I don't know. I just fell in love with it. There's no other way. And I just thought, okay, I want to study chemistry because it's so interesting. I went to UC Berkeley and I started studying chemistry, which I really enjoyed. And I got into total organic synthesis. So figuring out conceptually how to build molecules on paper. I guess I like puzzles and putting things together. I did some lab work. But what I was finding is in the lab, which is obviously where my future would be, we were making like micrograms of things and then analyzing. And I thought, this is not very practical. I'm a really practical person. I want to think about something. I mean, I love chemistry. I love thinking about processing, but this is getting too esoteric for me. So then I took an engineering class, material science engineering. I thought, this is better. This is more my speed. This is applying chemistry to the real world. And I got interested in metallurgy and the extraction of metals. And that's what I did my PhD in. So I've been sort of on this path to try to do practical things. And I guess I ended up wanting to help people have better health. So that's where I ended up.
Okay, great. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that, Naomi. Now we would love to hear about your current cohort and, you know, what the topic is. And
Thank you for asking. So as I said, we're on our 11th cohort and we're open and looking for digital health startups that want to engage pharma as clients. And we're focused on the theme of digital innovations in immunology. Now, these themes are always selected by our pharma members who meet with the startups at, hear their pitch and meet with startups at the end of the cohort. And when we think about immunology, it is actually a really broad topic. So we're certainly interested, and pharma is working a lot on immune-mediated diseases, allergy, asthma, all of those conditions. If startups have digital solutions to support those conditions, that's of great interest. Also, immune oncology is a really important and growing area for pharmas, and a lot of needs there. So some digital opportunities and hopefully innovative startups will apply in that area. And then there's also, you know, advanced therapies that are based on impacting the immune system, which is incredibly complex and impacts many organs. So this theme is very broad. And also when you think about immunology patients and their needs, they often are dealing with chronic conditions, with flares. So also solutions around patient monitoring, patient identification, diagnosis, all of that is of interest to pharma and therefore of interest to PharmStars. So it's a very broad and exciting area, and we hope that we'll have a lot of startups. Ritu, our accelerator is virtual, which means startups from around the world can apply. It's a 10-week boot camp where startups come to class virtually. For most of the time, we have an in-person launch event and obviously an in-person showcase at the end. But we've had amazing startups from, I think, like 39 countries at this point participate in our program. So it's a good gateway also for international startups to find their way to global U.S. pharma companies.
Yeah, that's an incredible opportunity. And thanks for clarifying that, Naomi. I'm sure, you know, we have listeners from all over the world. So hopefully, you know, this might reach somebody and they'll apply. So that's great. Let's go back a little bit to your time at, you know, Boston Children's or Kaiser, where you were evaluating and scaling a lot of healthcare innovations. So what lessons from that experience, you know, still guide how you assess the startups today? And now you said you're on your 11th cohort now. So what qualities do you think the most successful healthcare innovators, you know, share? Like, you've seen companies that are successful who've raised $1 billion, like you said. You must have, you know, some insight into these particular qualities that you can tell right away that, okay, these guys are going to make it. So the secret sauce. So we would love to hear a little bit more about that.
Okay, great. That's a big question. So when I was at Kaiser Permanente, my team was innovation and advanced technology, and we were identifying emerging technologies from outside of Kaiser and looking to see, like, were they a fit with the organization? So I think it was very important there to understand what the doctors were looking for, make sure that the solutions did not, they worked well, they solved the problem, they didn't costs the doctor more time. They sort of worked in the workflow of the clinician. When I moved to Boston Children's Hospital, our Innovation Acceleration Program had a different mission. It was to enhance the innovation culture. So there we were sort of helping doctors identify problems, and we actually were building a lot of solutions for them. We had a digital health innovation lab. We also had funding. So we were doing a lot to help doctors develop their own ideas, which was really exciting. There were a lot of startups at that point that wanted to bring their innovations into the organization. And one of the things I always advised the startups was that you will need an internal champion. Navigating even a hospital like Boston Children's Hospital, which certainly is not the largest in the country, but is complex. You have to find somebody inside the organization that wants to use your solution, that will be your champion, and will guide you through the process of getting funding and approval and basically help your product get used and tested within the organization. So that was a really, you know, important piece of advice. I think to answer your question about what are the qualities of successful startups. So I think the theme all the way through here is really understanding what your clients' needs are and building a good relationship with them, having very open communication. I think listening, it's amazing. Startups are very excited about their solutions and they'll go to a business meeting and they'll want to just do all the talking and do all the pitching. But actually, it's really important to listen. What is it that the client or the potential customer needs? We counsel and we coach our startups to do a lot of research before they go into that first meeting to understand, in the case of our startups, what the pharma pipeline is, what their pain points are, and really to speak to that. And then we say beyond just listening, deals are relationships. And the startups that are really successful are the ones that understand that and that build relationships, not just professional relationships like here's the solution, how much are you paying me, but how is it going? How can I help? What will make this successful for you? So we really advise people to build relationships. And I think the startups that I see that are successful, you know, they listen. They have a solution, they step into their client's shoes and they talk about their problems, and then they really build a relationship of trust. People want to work with people they trust, people want to work with people that they like, and I think those are the qualities that we see in a very successful entrepreneur. And then beyond the obvious, you know, passion and great communication skills and love of technology, all of those are obvious, but I think it's really about your ability to build a relationship and connect with the client.
Yeah, great advice. Thank you for sharing, Naomi. And, you know, we were at another accelerator program, and one of the key insights that they offered was that they've seen that most startups who are successful have pivoted at least once. So has that been your experience as well? Because you said listening is important. And when if you're truly listening, then I guess those things are kind of interrelated, right?
I think that's exactly right. If you're listening, chances are you'll hear how to change and improve your product. And we get a lot of startups into our program that are selling their solutions successfully elsewhere in healthcare to providers, to payers, and they think that there might be a pharma opportunity, and we agree with them, which is why we accept them into the program. They're not really pivoting their product because the product is built, but they're pivoting the application and they're pivoting how they package the product and how they explain it and what problem they say they're addressing. So I say probably maybe 40 or 50% of the startups in our program are not pharma first. They are coming from elsewhere, but they're recognizing that pharma needs their solution. And that's what we help them with. And that's what they really come to us is to understand the pharma industry, understand how to position their solution and to then successfully sell it. So pivoting is just, I think, part and parcel. I'd be shocked if the product and the explanation any startup started with is where they are, you know, a couple of years later, if they're still in business.
Yeah. Thank you, Naomi. As usual, the time has flown by and we are almost at the end of the podcast already. So thank you for being our guest. And would you like to offer any closing statements or, you know, anything you would like to share with the listeners before we wrap up? Thank you.
Well, Richard, first of all, I want to thank you for having me on The Big Unlock. This is an awesome podcast, and I'm honored to have been your guest. And I just want to, again, invite startups to apply for our upcoming 11th cohort. Our virtual accelerator will be running in the fall of 2026. We'll accept 10 startups from around the world with a focus on digital innovations in immunology. It's an opportunity to learn about pharma, to be mentored, and we also invest in our startups. So you'll also get investment from the PharmStars Venture Fund. So it's a great accelerator, and I appreciate the opportunity to share it with you and your audience today.
Great. Thank you so much, Naomi.
Thank you.